Good afternoon. I'm Wendell Brozzi. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Administration at the University of California, Irvine, and also the Chair of the University of California Climate Solutions Steering Group. And it's my pleasure this afternoon to be the moderator of this discussion. Welcome to all of you who are here in the room. Also, I'd like to welcome the many who are joining us online. We hope to involve everyone before the end of the discussion today. I should start off, before I forget, to remind you that session evaluations are appreciated. There are two ways to do them. You can do them on the link on the email kiosk main page anytime after this session, or from the link on the conference program page until November 23rd. Please give us your feedback. It's very useful. The format for this session will be that first we'll have some dialogue, and by that I mean we'll hand off topics between the two presenters to my left and right, and we'll do that for a while, and then we'll switch over into more interaction with questions. That will actually give the remote participants a chance to send in some questions, which we'll be including in the discussion. The intent of this format is to actually take some polar positions and to... It's not exactly a debate, but it's something where we'll take some contrary views. If it doesn't get contrary enough, part of my role is to stir it up a little bit. And the idea here is to sharpen up the issues and to explore varying perspectives. And we want you to know that we'll probably take some positions that once we go back to our campuses, we wouldn't defend. So just be aware of that. I'd like to briefly introduce the presenters. To my left is Mark Askren. Mark is the CIO at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and before that, he was the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Administrative Computing Services at UC Irvine. I can tell you that Lincoln is as happy to get him as we were disappointed to lose him at Irvine. Before being at Irvine, he was at the University of Illinois, and before that at the UC San Diego School of Medicine. Donald Spicer, to my right, is an ECAR Senior Fellow and the CIO and Associate Vice Chancellor for Information Technology for the 13 Institution University System of Maryland. He has previous experience as both a faculty member and an academic administrator, including CIO level positions at the University of Notre Dame and Vanderbilt University. And he's made numerous contributions both to EDUCAUSE and more broadly to the profession. So having dispensed with those formalities, let's jump in. Is green IT a wallet or a conservation? Or rather, a conscious issue. Do you want to start?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. It's a conscious issue. It's the largest issue of our time. We've got a lot of things going on at EDUCAUSE at these conferences each year, but of all the things we're struggling with, and some of them are considerable as far as budgets, as far as ERP implementations, the one thing 100 years from now that as higher ed IT leaders get together that they'll be thinking about back to our time is what did we do when we had the opportunity with green IT? Did we step up? Did we all do our share? The problem is a lot larger than IT, of course, but it's something that we can either choose to get engaged on or not. Now, that said, the real way to attack it is through the wallet. So right now, nothing's getting traction for the most part, unless it saves money, unless we can become more efficient, unless it generates net new dollars. So I think that's the twist with this, is it's a conscience issue. But right now, our tactics to address it are through the wallet.
What do you think, Don? Is that too lofty?
Well, I'm in the interesting position of arguing against conscience. and there are people who, in fact, would argue against conscience. I'm not one of them. I think that doing the right thing is important. This is a horrific time to put social burdens on top of everything else that people are doing, and they're hanging on. It used to be do more with less. Now it's try to keep things going with much less. So I think everybody does want to do the right thing and have it a conscience issue. On the other hand, it is difficult to have the mind share for this sort of activity on top of everything else that people are dealing with. Our institutions have made a substantial commitment to green initiatives, but I've noticed in the last year they have sort of sunk a little bit in the priority scheme at some of the institutions.
Well, Mark, that kind of goes to the question of the economic conditions and where does that lead this whole, even though I think a lot of people could agree with the principles that you first outlined, what happens when those collide with economic realities like we're seeing today?
Well, I think that, you know, the short answer is we've got to focus on those projects that really save money and that they have a short enough turnaround time. So with energy company rebates, with some things we can do operationally, with staff and faculty student awareness, there are things we can literally do right now, and of course many of our institutions are already doing them, that can save money. Now, it doesn't always appear in departmental budgets. In fact, it rarely does, and we'll talk more about that later on. But keeping the focus on short paybacks, part of the issue with the short payback period is that not only is that more attractive in these difficult economic times, but there's a real question about whether we should be investing in IT projects at all that have longer than, say, a three-year payback period. Data center upgrades, things of that nature, which we'll talk about. Is it really wise for us to go after something, even with substantial payoffs, if the time frame is too long, given that we can't really predict what's coming next with IT?
So
I hear you agree, but you're not supposed to agree.
I'm not supposed to agree, but to some degree I will, because actually I did a little study with a colleague 2 years ago on IT and green initiatives before it was really an IT-focused activity. And I was surprised to discover how many sustainable initiatives people had done in the last 3 or 4 years, even though it had nothing to do with sustainability. It really had to do with the fact that they could see that server virtualization was going to save them money, and so they were doing it. So to some degree, I agree that we can do the right thing, but often the motivation is the wallet.
Well, we've also found that virtualization has a big byproduct that actually wasn't one of the prime movers to start with, but the amount of space saved is just incredible. And when we're talking about redesigning data centers and actually putting more into data centers, that's extremely valuable as a benefit.
And in fact, I think we should pick up on that later, because it's not only the data center, but it's at a research university like UCI, it's the servers all over the campus.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about users. In universities, any resource planning or resource administration endeavor has to take into account whether you have carrots or sticks, to use the crude metaphor. Do we have any at our disposal? What do you think, Don?
You know, this is...
How do you feel as a CIO?
This is a global issue, but when it comes down locally, it becomes an enterprise issue. And enterprise issues, if they're really going to be addressed, have to come from the top. It's very hard for somebody in middle management, I'd say, to have much influence in carrots or sticks. And so it's another one of these issues where I think institutional leadership has to express itself.
And I think with the perspective that, you know, carrots are really the only thing we have at our disposal in general, especially working with faculty. There are no sticks. So we've got to find some positive incentives, and they're not there yet for the most part right now. I think with virtualization as an example, one of the multiple benefits is we can provide better service, and people are realizing that it's less work to maintain those. So when we can complement service improvements with reducing energy usage, then it becomes somewhat easy for us. But there are a lot of things right now where we need as institutions to put more in place and to ultimately hold us all accountable for how we're doing in this area.
Let's ask the audience, just for a show of hands, on the following question. In your institution, is there any consequence for IT energy efficiency? When I say consequence, it can be either a negative consequence, a penalty, or a reprimand, or it can be positive, even just a pat on the back. So how many actually know of tangible consequences? I see a few hands. It's hard to see with the lights.
Yeah. One, two.
Three, four. Okay.
I see Joyce from Stanford. I know they're doing a lot of great work, and she'll be presenting on that this week. But from other folks, is there anyone that can talk a little bit about what those incentives are, as far as just kind of briefly summarize those? So for the online audience, if you weren't able to hear that, basically the issue, the negative consequence is not building a data center right now, given the expense, given the energy involved. And so the question was, you know, how does that impact things when you, in effect, it interferes with a research university fulfilling its missions? And you know, that's an interesting point. I think something that we're not going to see a lot of data centers, new data centers built, and some of the ones that have even been built in the last decade probably perhaps have lost some opportunities to be greener. There's certainly opportunities for us to remodel, but that can be very expensive. So we know, the good news is we know a lot from the studies that some of you in the room and online have been participating in and leading, that we know a lot of things we can do to be energy efficient, but actually getting them done, it can be a challenge. And I think the broader issue, which we'll talk a little bit about the cloud later on, is are we really going to be running our own data centers like we do now, as far as is that always going to be just something we have, or is that going to change?
Sorry about the technical problem we were trying to fix here while Mark was talking. Hope that wasn't too much of a distraction. To press ahead here, is IT perceived to be an important player?
So I mentioned the little study I did because our institutions made a big commitment to sustainability across the whole system, and IT was never at the table. And I really wanted to ask, is that generally true? And if so, why? When I talk to presidents and other leadership, sustainability is all about new building construction and LEEDs certification, or how we buy energy. But I think there's a role for IT that we can talk about later on. A, we're a big consumer, and B, most initiatives that might take place on the campus that have other big impact are going to be enabled by IT.
Mark?
Well, I think it is campus specific. We see a lot of variety, and I know just reading through some of the update reports for the President's climate commitment that you see some campuses where IT is very, very strongly involved and others where they don't seem to be there. I agree with Don that a lot of times the focus is on transportation, it's on construction of efficient buildings. There are things going on with fume hoods and other labs that are just huge consumers of energy, and that they should have the focus. But what I think we all need to do in IT, and this is really even a broader issue than just green, it kind of gets back to that, is IT at the big table? Does IT matter strategically to a research or other university? It's up to us, and there may be a lot of things organizationally that are beyond our control, but we can certainly take it upon ourselves to get involved with campus sustainability efforts if IT isn't there already. And we're a pretty significant user of energy, and one of the fastest growing ones on campus. So we need to get in there, we need to contribute. And the other thing that I think will help us all is if we don't just begin and end around the IT aspects of sustainability. That's our area of expertise. That, in effect, is our entree. But when I see campus sustainability leaders, I don't think any of these people existed 10 years ago, even anyone from facilities or whatever their area. They've invented themselves and built their skill sets and their experience and their leadership. They may not have been doing, they may just have one narrow aspect of expertise, yet they've become very effective leaders within sustainability for the campus. I'd like to see us as IT leaders do that in this area so that it's not just about the IT person talking about IT issues. We can do more than that, and I think we need to do more than that.
Let me take a little contrary view. I don't disagree that in principle, Mark is right. I do think that in the current situation where everybody is really struggling, I don't know that I see people standing up for bigger roles and a bigger portfolio of things. And again, I wonder how much the leadership really perceives IT as either part of the problem or part of the solution.
Well, going to that survey that was taken every year recently, we saw the results of the annual CIO survey, where there's a top 10 list, and I don't think sustainability is on the list. So you're saying, I think, something that's consistent with that, that people are worried about basic business delivery and coping with resources rather than sustainability. Why is that? I mean, well, you said why, but do you think there's any chance that that list will change? I mean, obviously the people in this audience are probably here wouldn't have responded quite the same way.
Let me take a couple of different perspectives on that. One is the perspective of EDUCAUSE. I think if you look at this conference, this is one of many green IT sessions, and so I think EDUCAUSE has really raised it to a high priority item, and so I certainly from the national association level, there is a lot of recognition about green initiatives and the role of IT. I'd say the other perspective is the more local perspective, and I lost the train of thought. I'll come back to it.
Well, you gave me a suggestion. I have a theory about why CIOs, as soon as you give them a few facts, get vitally engaged in this, and it's because this group is full of people who understand arithmetic. If you look at most institutions, whether you're looking at four-year community colleges or research universities, the truth is IT right now, at this point in time, if you take a snapshot, isn't the biggest part of the carbon footprint. It's not even a very significant part in the larger scheme of everything, including transportation, ventilation, lighting, and so on. But it's growing at double-digit rates. It's growing at 15 to 20% a year. And everybody in here knows what 15 to 20% compounded growth will do. It may, even if it's not the biggest now, that means it will be within 5 or 10 years. It'll overtake a lot of things in the carbon footprint. And I think as soon as a CIO hears those facts, it's just like that. People are engaged. It's pretty simple.
Let me pick up a little bit on put two ideas together. One is, we don't do transportation, but if the institution is going to do anything about reducing transportation, IT is going to have to come in into play. And so while we might not be the biggest consumer, we're a huge enabler, because if you're going to do teleworking, or you're going to do hybrid classes, or you're going to do more online courses to reduce commuting to campus, then you're going to have to turn to the IT organization.
Absolutely, as far as we have to always make sure that we're articulating and living, demonstrating that we are the solution, and that yes, IT is expensive, and it's a consumer, and it's raising as far as the consumption rates. But just as Don mentioned, that we ultimately, there's a major payoff if we use IT strategically and effectively for our campuses. Just to quickly get back on the top 10 list and what's important about it, and I realize those things over time and a once-a-year process is we're going to miss some things, but those lists can be important because there may only be even three or four or five things that any of us can do at a campus in a given year that creates substantive change. So it's always nice when those things that we're working on our individual campuses to do show up on the radar of our organization or of our community, because sometimes our senior leaders on campuses will look to that as a reality check and to see, is that something that Mark's just particularly interested in, or is this something that's in alignment with where others are going. As Don mentioned, though, it's fantastic to see both all the sessions here this week and EDUCAUSE Quarterly. EDUCAUSE Review had major focus, wonderful articles on green and sustainability issues. So I think EDUCAUSE has really stepped up on this.
Can I make one other point?
Sure.
ECAR, the question is, how high does this really rank in the thinking of CIOs? And the current issues is really a short survey, and it's a limited spectrum. Mm-hmm. ECAR is actually undertaking a significant research study that will come out in the first quarter of 2010 on the issue of IT's role in sustainability and how IT articulates with campus planning. And so there will be a substantial data-based study on what's happening in American higher education with regard to sustainability on campus and IT's role in it.
So if the goal is to change that double-digit growth rate to something more sustainable, what kinds of efforts are needed in IT? What things would have the right kind of requisite scale to really alter the shape of a curve? We all know how hard it is to change the trend line.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing, for example, is that whole issue of, are we just trying to reduce the growth rate of our consumption, which is certainly a laudable goal, but that's not going to get us to carbon neutral. And if you are part of an institution that signed the President's Climate Commitment or have an interest to that extent, that we do need to stop not just operating on the margins, but actually do something that's much more transformative. One idea on that, as far as the telecommuting, teleworking issue, is for IT, and it's certainly, I think, true for some other administrative areas, is, do we really need to have a physical presence on campus? Can we not just take the, it's nice to have FaceTime, but let's sacrifice some of that. Let's use the better technology that's available now. Let's take advantage of networking everywhere and have people commute. And that also fits in nicely with cloud initiatives, with offshoring or outsourcing or whatever it might be, insourcing. But to get out of that model where we would have a department and we would have people that would come in and drive to campus, part of that carbon footprint, they would have their offices, and shake that up where maybe only a half or a third of staff in those kind of positions would actually come to campus any given day. And if you look at what we could save in terms of office space, related utilities, carbon footprint for commuting, those are things. They're not without cost as far as the culture and as far as some of our ability to get things done, but those are the kinds of things that would really make a difference, much more so than some of the things that are going on right now.
It'd be hard for me to be contrarian here.
Try.
Because, Maryland does an energy audit, and transportation in Maryland is about 30% of the carbon gas emission. Mm-hmm. So if we want to make an impact, I guess I have to agree with Mark that reducing the amount of commuting. I would say that education in Maryland is probably overall one of the largest employers. Mm-hmm. And so to the degree that education can change the shape of the commuting that goes on in a congested metropolitan area, I think that we probably would have a much bigger impact than putting in power strips on desktop computers.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me try the contrarian position, since you two won't disagree about this.
Yeah. We will disagree with you, though.
There are a lot of things in sustainability where there is actually a limit, some kind of an asymptote. I'll give you a good example in a different area. In lighting, a lot of the energy retrofit projects you're going to see on your campuses, especially if your campus has signed up to with the American College and University President's Climate Commitment and is trying to get all the way to carbon neutrality, the lowest hanging fruit is going to be a whole range of energy retrofit projects, some of them in IT, most of them in illumination because it's so ubiquitous. It's every place. It's not just every space, but parking structure, parking space outside, and so on, every path and so on. And also in a research university, labs are going to be a big thing. Okay, so there's a limit, it turns out, with lighting. I mean, you can go from T12s to T8s to T5s to electronic ballasts to now induction lamps and LEDs, but it turns out there's actually a physical asymptote beyond which you cannot get more lumens per watt. So my point about that is we will approach that asymptote. We will get as close as we can within cost-feasible parameters, you know, financing and so on. It'll probably be LEDs or induction tubes, maybe some kind of plasma lighting. But the point is we won't go any further than that. We'll still have to have lighting. And see, there's why I think the analogy exists, because we'll still have to have computing. No one's talking about going to zero IT. And so I think that's why campuses will have to do as well as they can on the conservation side, but recognize that there are limits. And then the emphasis will have to go to the renewable energy side. It'll have to go to the supply side. And I just don't think there's any other alternative.
I think Mark before, and I'll turn it over to Mark, actually did say we don't have to have IT on the campus.
Well, let's talk about that idea.
That's different than having IT.
Will cloud computing solve the problem? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I think part of what's interesting about cloud computing is that, and that seems to be really the critical issue that so many people are strategically grappling with right now, is what does that mean? I think in terms of energy efficiency, there's some assumption that these massive, you know, data centers around the world are going to be designed in such a way that they'll be more energy efficient than what we can do on our campuses. And that's likely true. But does that really change things, or is it just a matter of, well, it just gets it out of our local campus, it's just sort of out there somewhere. We're not really calculating what the footprint is anymore. It's just their problem now. So I think there'll be some green IT angle there in terms of, you know, wouldn't that be a nice thing to just sort of not have to count that anymore or even worry about it? But it doesn't necessarily get us where we need to go. But the broader issue, though, with just like we talked about as far as telecommuting or not being physically present, is, you know, there's that transportation angle, and Wendell mentioned earlier as far as some of the things that are going on that are much larger than IT right now, is if we did move a lot of things to the cloud or otherwise off campus, or we moved our staff off campus, if we did things like that, it would certainly slow down the growth rate, and it would take it to the point where you know, we could get out of that steady state. Right now, campus, higher education, as we know, we're not necessarily the most agile organizations around. And so we work in the IT business, most of us here and online today. Yet IT is changing so dramatically and really accelerating the rate of change. Yet if you look at how we're organized and what our processes are within an IT organization on campus, I don't think you'll see that much change there compared to what you would see in a lot of other areas on campus. So we're using web services, we're using new tools, but how we go about our business has largely been the same for quite a while. So I think from that perspective, the cloud has a lot of potential to change a number of things, both economically, the scalability, and the green IT. But it also is a huge cultural change that I think we're not going to really know how deep that's going to go for a few years now.
Well, in response to the two of you, A, we are so far away from the asymptote in the way we provision IT on most of our campuses that we've got a long ways to grow for improvement. And while one immediately thinks about Google data centers on the Columbia River with renewable energy, there are, again, less significant efforts that could be made, and while they wouldn't be as good, we have I'm in a system with 13 universities, and they run probably 25 central data centers amongst them, there's a lot of I would say control issue and things like that. But people are going to move to private clouds, and they're going to campuses are encouraging distributed research groups to bring their servers into a better environmentally managed data center. Mm-hmm. I would say that systems are going to encourage multiple institutions to consolidate some services in a system-wide data center. Storage would be a good one. We've already done it with HPC. There are lots of things that we could do in a much more efficient way than we currently are doing it.
You know, I'm sort of a skeptic about the cloud concept, as I understand it, because to use your example, I mean, if it were possible to transport the computational problems to a large, very efficient data center near a renewable source, let's say, mm-hmm. let's not say it's hydro, any renewable source, that means that renewable source, since there's still a scarcity of renewable sources, isn't feeding some other part of let's say, higher education, which is a big customer of renewable energy. So until we have an ample amount of renewable resources, mm-hmm. it's just going to be displacing. I mean, we'll be able to say we're the winners, but somebody else will be the loser in that game. And I actually think we need to think long and hard about this, because campuses, by and large, have very, very efficient energy infrastructures. Many of them have cogeneration, thermal storage, combined cycle systems. There may be the gains of doing distributed generation on campus as compared to taking renewable power from a remote site, which could have gone to some other place. That's not such a clear trade-off, I think. Maybe it's time to open this up for a few questions. Do we have any from the remote participants yet? I encourage anyone who's listening online who wants to submit a question to go ahead and submit it. I see a few hands here. Yes. Now, I should ask, do people who are listening on the web, would they have heard that question?
Why don't you repeat it?
Pardon?
Why don't you?
Me repeat it? No. One of you guys repeat it.
I think it's a great question. I think the gist of it was that perhaps we should be writing better software so that we're not treating servers, and I would include desktop PCs and laptops, as throwaway items. If we're at a 3 to 4 year replacement cycle, that even if we recycle those in some sustainable way, it still seems like an enormous waste as far as all the energy that went into manufacturing that equipment. One point I would make on that is it's interesting, as we were going to talk a little bit about virtual desktops at some point, and we've seen with virtualization, especially the Windows environment with servers, these huge breakthroughs that seemingly almost all universities are able to adopt and have been very successful with. It's a great success story. But the question comes up, what about the virtual desktop? Is that the next area for great change? And my view on that, and we certainly did some of that at UC Irvine, and we have some folks doing that at University of Nebraska-Lincoln, is there's great potential, but I don't see it to the extent that we saw with VMware and other virtualized server environments. Part of it is if you start to take at least some of the personal out of personal computing, you'd better stand back, because you're going to get a lot of pushback, especially from faculty. So I think from a student lab perspective, I think with some staff, there's great potential, and there'll be some implementation. But I know that doesn't directly address the issue of better software, although really the virtual desktop is all about having a much smaller carbon footprint on the desktop that doesn't need to be thrown away every 3 years and is being done, in effect, by better software on the server. So I'm with you on that point, and I think that does, it does surprise me how we treat things as consumables, that that it's wasteful whether we count it per se for our campus or not. It's certainly, from the big picture, it's a problem.
You know, that is one of the good things about this whole sustainability movement, with its focus on the big metric of carbon footprint, because that actually causes people to take a much more cradle-to-grave, holistic view of all aspects of the carbon footprint, including the procurement cycle and what happens to things that are discarded and how long that takes and so on. So I actually think this is beneficial to examining that kind of question as part of the solution. So I hand in the back there.
Well, I think for those that may not have heard it online, basically talking about, if I understood, instead of cooling the data center and spending all that energy of, let's just have equipment that maybe breaks at the end of the replacement cycle rather than right now where it's just considered too slow or it needs to be replaced for other reasons, that, why don't we push maybe reliability and treating it as kind of sacrosanct of that server or that machine always running. Maybe it's different with the cloud. Maybe it's different with how we do things virtually or with modular replacements, that we can take another look at that. Something we've seen with the data center, it's a classic, and I think there's a good point here, that there's kind of two things in play. One is, are we doing all the right... There's a lot of things that we know now that we didn't know 3 years ago on a broad scale within higher ed on green practices. What do we do to help all of us leverage those if we haven't done them already? There's certainly a lot of ground to be gained there. But the other issue is thinking about things completely differently. So something that I know Wendell has looked at quite a bit and others have been the issue of, do data centers need to be cold at all? And we've seen with operating specs of equipment that, if things need to be 85 or 90 degrees, if that's within the manufacturer's recommended range, why in the world do we have these data centers at 68? Part of that, too, I think comes in other ways as far as airside economizers. I've dealt with, kind of classic air conditioning vendors that just say, well, nobody uses outside air to cool a data center. It's just not done. And we've seen from research and from experience that is exactly not accurate. And just something as simple as having a system that mixes in outside air, it's a huge payoff. So I think there is something to be said there for taking a different look. And it's interesting in the sense of, I can't remember the last time some piece of hardware just sort of failed end of life. In fact, we hardly have hardware failures at all anymore, yet there we are replacing them all the time, faster, cheaper, maybe greener, but it does seem like that we're missing that part of the manufacturing cycle in our thinking.
So I have I've got a lot of views on pieces of that. So one of them is that let's go back to the incentives issue. What's the incentive to reconfigure your data center so that it runs in a more sustainable manner? I would say that probably nobody in the room knows what the energy usage of their data center is, or if they know, is charged for being or gets rewards for being more efficient. Charged on the negative side.
Let's ask how many people here actually, in their IT budget, pay the utility bill.
One.
Okay.
But a leading institution in this regard.
Indeed.
So Stanford's out in front of this one again.
Well, it's hard to see it, but we can't see the number of hands. Sorry.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
My boss tells me you do what you measure. We don't measure energy utilization at the granularity that's going to incent people to either do the right thing or to try to save budget or any of the carrots and sticks sides of this. And until we do that, which is highly unpopular, I'm sure, we are in fact are not going to make major changes.
I think it's a really good point that this whole measuring issue that we've seen, that I think the forward-thinking campuses now are really taking a look at that again. And ultimately, how we're going to reduce energy usage is to take it to whether it's the researcher, whether it's an organization that's putting in new services, that they can factor in the true cost of energy for the campus as part of the equation, part of the analysis. Doesn't mean that we're not going to to invest in these things that consume energy. It just means that it needs to be a visible part of the equation rather than just sort of out there somewhere else. So as people move to consolidating servers and within university systems, I think sometimes now they're starting to see for the first time that the host institution will say, yes, we can do that, this is all good, but oh, by the way, you owe us this many thousands of dollars for energy per rack each year because that's what it costs us. That whole concept seems to be something that we really need to take advantage of. I'd like to see in my career the point where we have a performance review, and I know those evaluations kind of look pretty similar to what they did for me 25 years ago as far as those lines and checkboxes. You know, wouldn't it be great if there was something in there about energy efficiency or sustainability for the campus that we actually were recognizing that that is part of our job as managers, as campus leaders.
Gentleman right here.
You.
Chip Kennelly, Bronx Community College, Bronx, New York. Thank you. I think the concern is, at least from our point of view, we have about 1,500 desktops, and you were asking before whether there's going to be a penalty if we're not doing our best in terms of energy efficiency. Part of the City University of New York, we have about 23 colleges, and we've just been told that we need to shut our equipment down when it's not in use, talking about the desktops, and to comply by January 1. When we look at that, we look at bandwidth and the fact that most of our fixes are going at night against what are 90-some-odd percent XP type machines. I'm curious if anybody else is running into this in terms of trying to do energy efficiency by doing just that, having machines closed down for the most part and trying to do your maintenance, if you will, during the daytime. I think it's an interesting problem that's coming upon us because, frankly, from the state of New York to the city of New York, those are some of the things that they're trying to do to handle the green and the dollars, both at the same time.
It's a good example of what happens when well-intentioned regulatory strictures are really blunt instruments, I guess, when it comes to trying to do your job.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that we've seen is, I don't know if we would call it a myth or not, but it is that feeling that end users are properly configuring or leaving them set correctly after they've received them as far as energy, as far as hibernating, going to sleep, being off at night or in some deep sleep mode so to save energy. I think those are one of those things where I believe Lawrence Berkeley Lab and a few other folks have taken a look at that and found that that's not the case, that needs not only user awareness, but it likely needs some kind of an enterprise software tool to be able to manage that and have that wake online. And it is hard with patching and it is hard with remote access, but those are the kinds of things that really make a difference. And I think that sometimes they're assumed that it's really not everybody's doing okay with that, and I think we all could use some help with that.
And let's go back. I think some of the studies I've seen have indicated that actually personal computers are a huge consumer of electricity worldwide, and it wouldn't be popular, I think, with many of the sponsors of the conference, but personal computers, A, consume a lot of electricity, B, are idle much of the time, and C, generate a lot of heat. So there is another model that should be considered. I think an intermediate step that probably saves on many of those things are laptops, which are much more efficient in terms of energy, mm-hmm. and the prices come down so that they're almost competitive. Mm-hmm. The suggestion you made earlier about thin client computing, which has made a couple of runs, but it was never caught on. I think probably time is ripe again with virtualization and other tools where you can have, at least for administrative users, pretty much the same experience as you would have with a personal computer. A, at less cost, and B, at less energy utilization. So I might challenge you as a vice chancellor for finance to encourage thin client computing. And
I'm a reluctant customer, as Mark knows. But it's, as Mark pointed out, it's got a few bugs yet to be worked out. Yes? There's a mic coming up right here. So
question. I came in a little late. Jeff Siepel from Philadelphia University. You mentioned incentives a minute ago. Let me describe a situation that we survive under in Philadelphia. We buy our energy from PECO. We use electrical energy 12 months of the year. In August, that's our measurement month. The other 11 months are billed at 80% of our measurement month by PECO. We have three feeds to campus. If we use 100 units, for sake of example, in August, The other 11 months are billed at 80 units. We can close the campus down and they will bill us 80 units, 80% of peak use measured in August. I think there's a greater problem here with some of the providers. Now, PICO may not be a good example, but how many people know in the room how your campus is actually billed for power? That's great. Anything like that, or are you billed monthly? Yeah. So there are some archaic formulas out there that, quite frankly, we do the right thing because we're interested in conservation and reducing consumption, but it literally does us not a whole heck of a lot of good in months September through July, unless we can peak shave, we do, and we do some of that with generation, but the formula is not, at least in the PICO footprint in southeastern Pennsylvania, is not conducive to reduction.
I think maybe shutting the campus down for a couple of weeks in August would be a really be a good thing, right?
Hottest month of the year, move-in month.
It's an interesting point, I think, because our facilities areas have tended to have the most knowledge about energy management and those things and procurement. And so I think as IT leaders, we need to get in there and educate ourselves and to offer to help. Now, something like that may be certainly beyond our scope, but even to be aware of that would be pretty handy information to have.
Well, there are some pretty bizarre examples around the country of how utility tariff pricing works. But again, going back to a point I made earlier, one of the advantages of the president's climate commitment is it brings everything back to carbon. So even though you may have bizarre, anomalous situations, such as this billing situation, the real focus is reducing the carbon footprint. And that really focuses people on the goal, I think, in a way that makes it easier to work through some of these irrational things. Don't mean to be simplistic about it, but I do see that happening more and more. Yes?
Did you find that the location of the school changes sort of the... Do you find that the location of where the school is affects the programs you put in place? So, for example, could be a complete wrong assumption, but I would assume that on the West Coast in states such as California, there's more rebate programs available than other states. Or maybe the mentality is completely different. There's a lot of assumptions about California people as well. So, Mark, as someone who went from California to the Midwest, is there a culture change? Is there a different, are there more options available in one place over the other?
Well, I think I can respond a little bit. The locale has a lot to do with what your strategy will be and what your climate action plan for your institution would look like. If you're dependent on coal, for example, you have a totally different set of economic circumstances, and it'll become radically different once there's a price on carbon. In some form or another, whether it's a tax or cap and trade kind of system or whatever it may be. The business as usual case, in other words, the status quo case, will have a cost of carbon in it, which will be pretty substantial. And actually, that'll put campuses which are much more carbon dependent in their fuel supply for their basic energy for the campus on more of a par with states like Western states where there's less coal in the mix. So that's just an example of one of the circumstances that will become a leveling factor. And actually, I think getting a price on carbon is the singular most important obstacle in moving this whole agenda forward, because there are quite a few projects that are just this close to feasibility, but if you factored into the business as usual case the cost of carbon, they'd be right over the top. We'd be doing them. It'd be like an avalanche, actually, of a number of not just energy conservation retrofit projects, but renewable energy projects, which just don't quite make it yet.
Let me give a more localized answer. I'm part of a system. We have institutions in the congested metropolitan area. We've got institutions in the mountains in a rural area. when I talked about teleworking, the people at the rural institution laughed. They said, you know, we're a residential campus, and you know, teleworking just doesn't make any sense for us. On the other hand, they're looking into wind power. They're out in the mountains of Western Maryland, and so I would say different institutions on the institutional level really are going to take a different perspective on what makes sense for them.
More questions? It's hard to see your hands. The lights are so bright here. In the basement. There, right in the front row.
Jonathan Putt, MIT. One of the incentives, carrots or sticks, I'm not quite sure how to frame it, that we've seen, and it's more in the metropolitan areas, is the density of getting the power, the availability of the electricity. You can't say add another megawatt service to a data center. How do you see that impacting the future and growth and incentivizing doing things? The racks get denser and more power consumption, so the same space could be using twice as much power in a couple years.
I think that's a good point, that part of the whole issue as far as many of us have come out, and I think this is probably our last question. I think we've run out of time, but basically just to answer that quickly, you come into that wall, as you described, where you may have some great idea for expansion if you're a growth campus, if you have things going on, where we're all assuming that the infrastructure, at least I'm assuming at times, the infrastructure is going to be okay on a much broader level, that we're dealing kind of from the perspective of what's going on our campus and our energy users and our configuration. But all of a sudden you find out that that substation can't handle what you're doing, and that all of a sudden you've got $1 million bill or something like that. It changes things drastically, and I think that is, you know, we're seeing that that whole power transmission issue, that whole ability to ramp up, it's a factor, and I think that's another reason for us as IT leaders. We've got to educate ourselves. We've got to get into those discussions, not only just sustainability, but understanding what are the constraints for our campus? What is that overall footprint? Because it's very significant issues and very expensive.
You know, it becomes the national, one last comment.
On one that. Last.
It becomes the national initiative on smart grids.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that will be the last comment. We're out of time. Thanks so much to the audience for all the good questions and getting involved in the discussion.